This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, good evening. Welcome to Parsha Sheh with Parsha Shlach Lecha. If you're listening online, please email me at j.golker@gmail.com. Apologies, I've already had some complaints from the Israeli contingent who are listening and I send emails to that they're a week ahead. So they've asked for sheets from previous years. So if you email me, I will send you previous years. Let me know which year you're listening to. The first piece I'm very excited to share with you because it was a big chiddush to me when I saw this. And it's a very beautiful piece. It's from Rabbi Emanuel Bernstein Sefer. I was in touch with him. I know him quite well. And he told me, he very modestly doesn't quote anybody. So I asked him, is this your own idea? And he says, yes, this is from the IB Laboratory, Emanuel Bernstein Laboratory. So this is his own idea. It's something very interesting. If I were to ask you, how many meraglim, how many spies, which is, of course, the central theme of this week's parasha, how many spies were sent? I think you would all answer 12. Yeah, that's what I would have answered. But that actually is a machlokas in the Yerushalmi. We know there are two Gemaras. There's the Bavli and there's the Yerushalmi. Whenever we quote the Gemara, you know, almost 99% of the time, we're referring to the Talmud Bavli, which is the Babylonian Talmud, which is what we learn. The Yerushalmi is now becoming a little bit more popular. There's now Yerushalmi Dafyomi, and it's on, you know, the Dafyomi app and other things, but it's not as well known. It's much harder. It's an earlier, it was written a century or two before the Bavli, so it's more cryptic, it's more difficult. But the Yerushalmi quotes an interesting machlokas and essentially says that Rabbi Shmuel is of the opinion that there were 12, one per tribe, but Rabbi Akiva says there were actually 24. There were two per tribe, which of course is a very strange thing. We're like, why? Why do we need two men per tribe? Now take a look in the Pasuk, and you'll see where this comes from. The parasha begins, Vayedav Hashem el Moshe le'emor, Shlach lecha anoshim, send for yourself men, V'yosuru es Eretz Kanaan, and they will tour out Eretz Kanaan, Asher ani nosen ibnei Yisrael, ish echod l'mati avosov. Now you can see where this is heading, right? Ish echod is the repetition. Tishlechu kol nosi bohem. So the Yerushalmi quotes this machlokes, because I've got it there in the next box, in Masechta Sota, Perek Zayin, Halacha Hei. What does it mean, ish echot l'shevet? What is it? Why the repetition? And Rabbi Shmuel, interestingly, the machlokas is whether we say dibra Torah koloshen b'nei adam, which means does the Torah speak in the way we speak, human beings speak? Sometimes we repeat words, or lo dibra Torah koloshen b'nei adam. Rabbi Shmuel says, yeah, dibra Torah koloshen b'nei adam, and sometimes it says ish echot, that's just the way we sometimes speak, and therefore the Torah would say a similar expression. But Kiva says no, lo dibra Torah koloshen b'nei adam, and therefore if it says ish echot, it's clearly teaching me there was one man and another man, and therefore there were two men per tribe. So we've got a series of questions which we're going to ask, which perhaps we've overlooked in previous years, but it's fascinating. The first question, of course, is, why does Rabbi Kiva hold that you need two men per tribe? What's the need for it? And moreover, it seems to contradict an open pasuk, because later in Devarim, when Moshe Rabbeinu is recapping the sort of the history of the last 40 years, in the first parak of Devarim, pasuk Chaf Gimel, the pasuk says, "Vo'ekach mikem shnei mosa anoshim ish echod lashevet." I took for you 12 men, one man per tribe. So it says it very clearly. There were 12 men. So how can Rabbi Akiva suggest there were 24 based on ish echod, when the Pasuk in Devarim says absolutely clearly there were 12? Furthermore, another interesting observation, if you ever wondered, the Nasiim that we mentioned previously in this Sefer, in Parshas Bamidbar, we list the names of the Nasiim, the names that are recorded in the Torah. And yet, when you look at the Meraglim, it's a different name. So the question really is, why does Hashem tell Moshe to send Nasiim, and then it lists a group of people who are not Nasiim? Their names are different to the Nasiim in the opening of Sefer Bamidbar. Good question. You look a little bit unhappy about that.
No, I'm just thinking, was there one spy, I mean, the one or the two, was there one spy for Yosef? Was there one for Ephraim?
You're worried about 12 or 13?
Yes, yeah, suddenly
there. It was Menashe and Ephraim, yeah. and they were considered two. And whether or not Levi sent, I don't think they did. So it does work out. There were 12. So the third question is, like I say, why does Hashem tell Moshe to send the Nasiim and then list a group of people who are not Nasiim, different names to earlier in the beginning of Bamidbar? Now, another question, very interesting question. If you go through the first perek of this week's parasha in Perek Yud Gimel, the pasuk says, "Vayalu v'yosures aretz." They went up and they toured the land. "Vayalu b'negev, vayavo et chevron." They went up from the south. They went to Chevron. "Vayavo al nachal Eshkol." They went to a place called Nachal Eshkol. "Vayichrusu misham zemoira." They cut a branch for Eshkol anovim of a bunch of grapes. Echod one. "Vayisauhu b'moit b'shnayim." And two men carried this sort of pole with a big, huge bunch of grapes, and they cut from the Rimonim and the Te'enim. Lamokum hahu kara Nachal Eshkol. They then had a ceremony to proclaim this place Nachal Eshkol. It's like a name-changing ceremony. An oides for Eshkol, because of what happened there, they cut Asher Karasu Misham Bnei Yisrael, etc., etc. So the problem is not so much that they, you know, this happened. They christened this place Nachal Eshkol, but they're meant to be spies. Spies are meant to keep a low profile. You know, you picture a spy sort of hiding in and out between the trees and his sort of wearing dark glasses and whatever it may be. But you're not going to have this sort of very public name-changing ceremony. What's that about? Seems strange. And a fifth question is, in that pasuk, in pasuk Chaftalet, in the name-changing ceremony, it refers to them as Bnei Yisrael. I've got it in bold there in Pasuk Chaftalet. Why refer to them here as the Bnei Yisrael? And previously, they've been referred to as Anoshim. If you look in the first Pasuk, the second Pasuk of the Tedra, Shlach Lecha Anoshim, Ish Echad, in the Pasuk in Dvarim, Shnei Mosa Anoshim, and all of a sudden, when it comes to over here, it calls them the Bnei Yisrael. Why the change? And last question, when you look at the psukim where Moshe Rabbeinu gives them their job description, their instructions, when they go out before they sent off to go to Eretz Yisrael, it says Vayishlach Oysam Moshe. I'm in the bottom box of the first page. Vayishlach Oysam Moshe Losseres Eretz Canaan. He sends them off. Vayomer Alehem Alu Ze Banegev. Go up from the south. This is where you start from. Varisim Es Oretz Mahi. You got to check out the land. Ve'sa'om ha'yoshiv olea hechozok hu harofe. Is it strong? Is it weak? Ham'atu imrav. Is it a small population, a large population? U'moharetz ha'shehu yoshiv bo ha'tov imra. Is it good land, bad land? U'moharetz ha'shmeinohi imrozo. Is it a very fat land, a very thin land? Is it sort of bountiful or not? Yesh bo eitz im'ayin. Has it got trees or not? And here comes the key word. V'hischazaktem u'lekachtem et pri ha'aretz. What is that word, v'hischazaktem? So chazak generally means to strengthen yourself. So normally it's translated to mean and strengthen yourself. In other words, good luck. You know, may the force be with you. But the Targum Yonasan translates the word v'hischazaktem as v'sa'avdun chazkosa. Now, chazaka in Gemara language is a very technical term. A chazaka is a way in which you acquire something. So, for example, we learn Baba Basra. Baba Basra is about property, about real estate. And how do you acquire a piece of land in halacha? It's an interesting thing to think about. And one of the ways of acquiring land is a chazaka, which means you demonstrate ownership, you start building and digging, or whatever it may be. But that's, the Targum Yonasan says, is pshatin mischazaktem, which means not that you strengthen yourselves, but you acquire the land. So what is going on over here? Six questions, just to summarize. Yeah, but that's often the case. It's al shame of this incident. In other words, it's called Nachal Eshkol because of this incident. They had a grape, they cut the grape, and they sort of, you know, they cut the fruit in order to take back. But, and as a result of that, they called it Nachal Eshkol. You find that a few times in Chumash. And Rashi often points out, al shame ha'asid, this is because of this incident. In other words, previously it was known as something else. Now, so in other words, we have six questions. Question number one, why does Rabbi Kiva require 24 men, two per tribe? Question number two, doesn't it contradict the Pasuk in Dvarim, Shnei Mosa Anoshim? Number three, why does Hashem tell Moshe to send the Nasiim and then list a group of people who are not the Nasiim? As in different names at the beginning of the Bamidbar. Why have this change naming ceremony when they're meant to be keeping a low profile? why in that change naming ceremony is it called in the Bnei Yisrael? And lastly, what's the Targum Yonason, what does he mean by translating v'ischazakdem, not as strengthen yourselves, but rather v'sa'avdun chezkosa, to acquire the land. So says Rabbi Emanuel Bernstein, a very innovative pshat. He says, there were two separate missions. One mission was to spy the land, the way we're all familiar with, to go and check it out, like Moshe Rabbeinu was saying, come back with a report, etc., etc. And the second mission is to initiate Klal Yisrael's acquisition of the land. Totally separate mission. They had to go there and, as it were, make the initial acquisition in this land, which they are hoping to go into pretty soon. Bear in mind, Moshe Rabbeinu was thinking that they're going to come back with a positive report, and then we're very soon going to Eretz Yisrael. This is it now.
How do you deal with the fact that they weren't meant to be Meraglim at all?
What do you mean?
Because Bnei Yisrael.
Oh, so let's see. So now let's go through our six questions, and we'll see. This will answer the questions. If we've got anything left to ask, then we'll see. But so the first question, Rabbi Kiva, why does he need 24? Very clear. 12 men are to spy out the land, one per tribe, and 12 men are to initiate, they're representing Klal Yisrael. That's why they're called the Bnei Yisrael, because they're representing the Jewish people, and they're making that initial acquisition of the land on behalf of, who does that? The Nasiim. Who are the spies? 12 others. Very good. Why doesn't it contradict an open pasuk? No, because the pasuk there in Devarim says, "Vo'ekach mikem shnei masa anoshim ish echad l'shevet." That's talking about the spying mission. That's okay. Rekiva says, I agree, there were 12 for the spying and then there were 12 for the initial acquisition. Why does Hashem send a different group of people? As I explained, there are 12 who are in the Nasiim, they're representing the Jewish people, and that's why they're called the Bnei Yisrael, because they're representing Klal Yisrael in this initial acquisition. Why? What about this name-changing ceremony? Aren't they meant to be keeping a low profile? No, the spies are keeping a low profile. They're going, touring the land, spying out, seeing, you know, the quality of the land, if it's fortified, if it's safe, can we attack it, all the other, the job mission. But in terms of the actual initiation ceremony, the acquisition, these people, we need to do this. And what do? They actually start working the land, cutting, and that's why it's called Bnei Yisrael in that posuk. Why does the Targum translate v'ischazaktem? Because that's exactly the point. The purpose of this mission for them is to initiate Klal Yisrael's acquisition of the land. So it's a very interesting explanation, something which was certainly a big chiddush to me. I wasn't aware of this Yerushalmi, first of all. And second of all, the whole concept of having two lots of spies, two groups of men, one spy and one representing Klal Yisrael to make this initial acquisition of the land, very interesting pshat. Do you still have a question?
I thought that you weren't meant to have Meraglim, so that you're saying this mission of the Nasiim was always going to happen. Only Hashem added the Meraglim.
In other words,
it's going to be a mission.
Yeah, and therefore all the Torah that is often spoken about, should they have gone, Rashi says, Shlach Lecha Anoshim, I'm telling you, you're doing it for yourself. That's all about the spies. That's about that group. There's a separate mission going on over here. The only difficulty I had, I was talking to my chavrusa last night, I mentioned that he had seen this idea as well in Rabbi Bernstein Sefer, and the difficulty is, many Mefarshim say that, again, we're talking about the Nasiim, and but they had Nagias. That's what a lot of people talk about on this week's parasha. They had personal interests. What was their personal interest? Some of them say they didn't want to lose their status. They were the Nasi of their Shevet. But if that's the case, the Nasiim were doing the different mission. They were doing the initiating, the acquisition.
Why had that not been mentioned?
What do you mean?
He's derived this. Why
yeah.
Hashem sent a mission to acquire the land.
So first of all, you've got the word v'schazakdem. You've got clues in the pasuk. The Torah doesn't always spell it out for us. You've got ish echad. You've got they're called the Bnei Yisrael. The Torah does that. It gives us clues to these sort of things. So you're right. It's not overtly said.
It's a big deal, really, then, to tag on the Meraglim if there was a mission going anyway. We hear this Targum.
That I'm okay with. The point. There were two different missions, and the mission of spying out the land all the Torah about that remains the same. They had Shabbat B'tachon, they should have listened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whatever it may be. But that's only in respect of that particular mission.
So why could the Messiah not just done both?
It seems like there's two separate jobs going on over here. One is to tour the land. It's a very different sort of job description to doing the acquisition.
And they were there for the same 40 days?
I don't know. Unclear. The first group certainly. So the difficulty is this. If the Nasiim were blamed for having their own vested interest, that they wanted to maintain, to retain their title, etc., that doesn't really work because it's the spies who fought for that, not the Nasiim who were doing this mission. So I messaged Rabbi Bernstein and I asked him about that, and he said, good question, not sure. Here's the point, and he says, look, you know, you don't have to always reconcile all the different mafarshim. This is one mahalach, this is a different mahalach. But anyway, he did give us an answer that perhaps the Meraglim were influenced by the because of the Nagias of them.
Yeah.
Right, so that's
together,
right. That's exactly right. So seemingly they were together. But either way, it's food for thought and Shabbos table discussion. Hopefully different to last Shabbos table discussion about grape juice and other things.
Was there a Nasi? There must have been a Nasi for Levi.
You're still doing the maths.
Levi
generally doesn't know.
The Nasi didn't do the acquisition.
Right, so Levi is considered separate. They're the sort of the exalted tribe who are sitting and learning, and the rest of them do this sort of the other.
There's no spy from Levi. There's no Nasi from
Levi. Yeah, that's right. Because they're considered, they're treated differently, they're counted differently. They didn't get a chelik in the land as well. Exactly. Yeah. So it makes sense. They didn't need to make an acquisition.
It sounds like one man.
Okay, so you follow the view of Rabbi Shmuel. You're in good company. Okay, let's press on. So I came across a fascinating Meshech Chochma. Really, really interesting. I saw it in my brother-in-law Sefer, Jeremy Finn's Sefer. I checked out the Meshech Chochma, a really interesting Sefer. Later on in the parasha, we talk about challah, right? Taking challah, being mafresh challah, you make dough and you mafresh challah. So that's in this week's Sedra. Says the Pasuk, Reishis Ariso Seichem, challah, the first of your dough, torimu truma, you've got to separate as truma, which means you're separate. In times of old, you give it to the kohen. Nowadays, we wrap it up, we burn it, etc. You're familiar with it. Says the pasuk, when you separate the challah, you should do it k'truma skoiren kein torimu isa, which means, and I must say in my ignorance, I've never really thought about this or noticed this before. When you separate challah, do it in the same way as your mafresh truma. Now, there's two totally separate things. There's challah and there's truma. Two different matonas to the kohen. There's loads of matonas. Truma, as we know, if you've got a field producing, 100 tons of grapes, so you have to give 2% as truma to the kohen, 1/50. If you're very generous, you give 1/40. If less generous, a 60th. Average, 1/50, 2%. You then give 10% to the levi, maisa, etc. But when you give truma, that goes to the Kohen. Says the pasuk, you should give challah to the Kohen, which is another gift that he gets, the first of your dough you give to him. Do it in the same way as you do the truma. What's the connection? Why are we saying to give the challah in the same way as you give the truma? Interesting question. Says the Meshech Chochma, k'trumas goyrin kein terumah sa. This is the second box on page 2. Al derech, in other words, al pi drush, if you like, v'himoyer shemayim aleichem. You should have the fear of heaven on you. Kamoire bosa v'dom. V'lochein. Betrumas goyren loimachnes derech gagin uvamoitz. Tefahesya silamilsa. What does that mean? We know there's a difference between tax avoidance and tax evasion. Right? Tax evasion is illegal. Tax avoidance is in 99% of cases, permitted. It's just a financial arrangement, you're trying to minimize your tax, that's okay. Lahavdil, in terms of truma, you can do the same. There are halachically permissible ways out of giving money to the truma, to the kohen, giving truma to the kohen. For example, the Gemara says that you've got your produce, you take it from the threshing floor, once you bring it back into your house, you've got a chiyuv now to give it to the kohen. But if you take it back to your house, not through the front door, but through the skylights, then you're exempt from giving truma. That's just a technical detail of the halachas of being mafresh truma. you're not going to do that. It's very unlikely. For you to get your ladder out and start taking your grapes through the skylight, it's highly embarrassing. People know you're doing your tax avoidance very publicly. As the Meshech Chochma says, the Befahes Zila Milsa. When it comes to challah, there are also ways out of giving challah to the Kohen. What is that? If you, for example, make a small amount, we know there's a shear for challah, it's got to be a certain amount. So you think to yourself, fine, I'll just do small amounts every time. I'll do it every few hours. If I've got a big shevet rochs to make, I'm making lots of challahs or whatever it is. I'll just do small amounts and I can do it in a way that I don't have to give money to the Kohen. Says the Meshech Chochma, that's why the Torah puts it together with Truma. Give challah in the same way as you give Truma. Just like with Truma, you're not going to do tax avoidance because there's the public aspect of it. It's too embarrassing to do it in public. Well, so too, when it comes to the challah, don't do the tax avoidance. Even though you're doing it in the privacy of your own home, says the Baal Tanur, says the Meshech Chochma, v'himoyer shemayim aleichem k'moyer bosav adam. You should have fear of heaven. Just because you're in the privacy of your own home doesn't mean you should therefore be tempted to get away with it and to try and invoke all of these heterim. That's the comparison between challah and truma. Just like with truma, you would desist from using all these shortcuts because of the public humiliation of doing that. Well, so too in the privacy of your own home, when you haven't got that public aspect of it, you should also make sure that you don't use the shortcuts. It occurred to me that there's a famous Maisa with Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel. Nosson Zvi Finkel was the legendary Rosh Hashiva of the Mir Yeshiva. He died, he was there in my day, and a remarkable person. He came to the yeshiva in 1960 as a 17-year-old boy from Chicago. You can read his biography. He came from a co-ed high school, and his grandfather's brother was Reb Lezer Yehuda Finkel. Reb Lezer Yehuda Finkel was the Rosh Hashiva of the Mir, pre-war Europe. He sort of restarted the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. And he was his great uncle, his grandfather's brother. So when Reb Nosson Zvi finished high school, he went straight to the Mir. He lived in Reb Lezer Yehuda's his great uncle's house. And they sectioned off a little bit of the living room with a curtain, and that's where he slept. One night, Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel, he goes to bed, and he wakes up at 4 o'clock in the morning because Reb Lezer Yehuda very quietly comes into the dining room, into the living room, which he would do every single morning. He would wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning and he would learn 8 blatois. That was his seder before shachris in the yeshiva. And he thought Reb Nosson Zvi was fast asleep. So Reb Nosson Zvi was curious. You know, he wants to see the Rosh Yeshiva, how he conducts himself. So he feigns sleep, and he sees Reb Lezer Yehuda, his great uncle, Rosh Yeshiva, say Birchas HaTorah. How did he say Birchas HaTorah? He goes over to his sfarim, and he takes out individual mesechtas, embraces them, kisses them, and says Birchas HaTorah with tremendous kavana. And that made a very deep impression, as it would on anybody, but on Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel. Now, whilst the story tells us volumes about the Avos HaTorah of Reb Lezer Yehuda Finkel, it also, for me, what I find exciting about the story is, were it not for the fact that Reb Nosson Zvi Finkel woke up that morning at 4 o'clock, no one would know this story. But the point is that Reb Lezer Yehuda Finkel, that's how he said Birchas HaTorah, in the privacy of his own home. And that's really what the Meshech Chochma is saying over here. Behave in your own home in a way which is like, you know, sometimes in public we hold back from doing things because it's in public. But we should try and, you know, keep that same level in our own homes. That's exactly the point. And that's the comparison of challah to truma. Okay, one last idea. One of the strange phenomena about the end of the parasha tzitzis, about tzitzis generally, is that the mitzvah of tzitzis is voluntary. Now this comes as a shock to a lot of people, but let me explain what that means. Exactly. There's two types of mitzvahs, mitzvahs asei. There's a mitzvahs kiyumis and a mitzvahs chiyuvis. What does that mean? Mitzvahs chiyuvis means I have an obligation to do it, come what may, I've got to do it. Mitzvahs kiyumis means if certain circumstances are there, then I have that mitzvah of doing it. For example, the mitzvah of tefillin for a man, it's a chiyuv. If it's not Shabbos and Yontov, I have an obligation every day to put on tefillin. No question, I've got to do it. If I'm sick, I'm not well, okay. But in normal circumstances, you've got a chiyuv, an obligation to put on. What about tzitzis? The Torah only frames it that if you are wearing a four-cornered garment, then you've got to put on tzitzis. Now, when I talk to my boys in school, they get very lomdish, yeah, and it's a hot day, and they say, but Rebbe, it's only mitzvahs kiyumis, and therefore, you know, if I see a guy, you know, whatever it may be, exercise, playing sport without, you know, just with his t-shirt or whatever it may be. So, okay, sport is a different shayla, not for now, but you can have a gym pair of tzitzis as well. But they get lomdish, because it's mitzvahs kiyumis. I often tell them the story of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon's on his deathbed. He's a man who has changed the world, one of the greatest Jews who's lived in the last 500 years, and on his deathbed he was crying. And his Talmidim was surrounding the bed, and they said, Rebbe, why are you crying? He's a man who's learned 22 hours out of every 24. He slept 2 hours a night. His students amazed about him. And even those 2 hours were in half an hour increments. Why is he crying? Because he said that for a few pounds, for a few dollars, you can buy a pair of tzitzis, and you can fulfill a mitzvah saseh min haTorah. And in a few moments' time, he's going to take leave of this world, and he'll never have this opportunity again. And that realization made him cry. So that's the power of eternity. That's the power of a mitzvah saseh. So you'd be crazy not to buy a four-cornered garment and put on tzitzis for a guy, because he's fulfilling a mitzvah saseh min haTorah. However, strictly speaking, it's a mitzvahs kiyum, it's not a mitzvahs chiyuvis, and therefore, to some degree, it's considered voluntary. Why? Why on earth would the Torah make this beautiful mitzvah tzitzis optional? So I came across a very interesting idea. My friends, I got these emails years and years ago. Every week I got these emails, and I kept the ones I really connected to. And he quoted one from Reb Nochum Lansky, I think he was a Rebbe in Israel in Baltimore. He says something very interesting. If you look at the last two boxes, there are interesting parallels between the beginning and the end of the Sedra. The beginning of the Sedra says, Re'isem es ha'oretz mahi, talking about the land. Late in the end of the Sedra says, V'hoylochem l'tzitzis u're'isem, I say. U're'isem, u're'isem. Same word, another parallel. V'ya'alu v'yosur es ha'oretz, go up and tour the land. Beginning of the parasha. The end of the parasha, tzitzis, V'lo sosur achari levavchem. Same word. Why is there this connection? Why are the parallels? Says this, the Nochum Lansky, very beautiful pshat. Rashi says at the very beginning of the Sedra, Shlach lecho anoshim. Says Rashi, Ledaitcha, you do it, Moshe Rabbeinu. Ani eini mitzavah lecho. I'm not commanding you to do it. Imtir tzishlach, that's Lashon of Rashi. It's voluntary, optional. You want to do it, that's fine. I'm telling you it's not necessary. The sending of the spies was optional, but it was an unmitigated disaster. That was the beginning of the end, if you like, the downhill, which led eventually to Churban by Bais Rishon. This was the turning point. HaKadosh Baruch Hu therefore gives us a mitzvah, which is also optional, to atone for that optional mitzvah, that optional meraglim that ended badly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us another optional mitzvah where we can atone and rectify for the chait of the meraglim. That's the idea. So the parallels, Urisem, Urisem, Vayasuru, Vulisasuru, connects the two together to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, look, something majorly bad happened over here. There was an optional mitzvah which turned into a disaster. I will give you a mitzvah that is also optional that you'll be able to use to atone and rectify the chait of the meraglim. A very beautiful connection. So there we have it. Three ideas, Rabbi Bernstein's fascinating take on the two sets of meraglim according to Bekiva, answering all those questions on the first page, the private-public aspect of paralleling, taking challah to truma, as we discussed, and then this third idea of why the mitzvah of tzitzis is optional, the idea being as an opportunity to atone and rectify for that optional mitzvah of the meraglim that turned into a disaster. Okay, we'll leave it there.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.